Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
And we are back, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck, Crossover NBA Podcast. And Beck, playing hurt this week, playing through pain, illness this week. You went public, Beck, with your COVID diagnosis on Twitter. How are you feeling right now?
Doing a lot better, Mannix. Thanks, appreciate it. I might not have my usual energetic flair. My hot takes might be slightly more lukewarm today. The good news is my head does not feel like one big freaking hot take anymore. The fever the first couple days was brutal. That was followed by the worst sore throat I've ever had in my life. That went away. Even triple vaxxed, COVID, not fun. In case anybody's wondering, yes, I do blame Las Vegas. I do blame Summer League. I should have never gone, which basically means I blame myself. This is self-inflicted. I know there were a lot of people who came out of Summer League with COVID, to probably no one's surprise. We probably should not have been there. But anyway, I'm on the mend. I'm doing all right. Thank you. Happy to be back pontificating on the pod.
Well, I can tell you, well, I'm glad to hear you're on the mend. I can tell you that at the very least, my craps table in Vegas was COVID-free. I have not heard from anybody that I play craps with in Vegas that there was a COVID issue. So glad to hear you back, though. Couple things I want to talk about on this week's podcast. The Lakers continue to be just an ongoing drama. The latest developments with the Lakers concern Russell Westbrook, who at Summer League appeared to have sort of an icy moment or an icy, I don't know how you define it, something with LeBron James. LeBron and Russ were at the Lakers Summer League game last week. They were on opposite ends of the court. And while LeBron interacted with everybody on that Laker team, he did not interact with Russell Westbrook. A visual that was chronicled by every reporter that was in the arena that night. Later on, there was a report by Chris Haynes over at Yahoo that LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook had a phone call where they discussed how to get on the same page going into the season. In the middle of all that, we had Thad Fouché, the longtime agent of Russell Westbrook, announcing via ESPN that he was severing ties. He and Russ were going their separate ways after 14 years as agent and player, and doing it with a statement unlike one, Howard, I have ever read before. And to paraphrase this statement, what Thad Fouché was effectively saying when he put this out was that he believed that Russell Westbrook's best course of action for this year and for the foreseeable future, the rest of his career, at least in terms of how he manages it, is to stay with the Lakers and not look for a trade that would ultimately end up with Russ getting bought out and potentially having to sign with a team for the minimum. So let's start there, Howard. Your thoughts on everything that's gone on with the Lakers and Russell Westbrook over the last week?
I mean, the bottom line is this. The bottom line is nothing has changed. It has all just brought, I think, more light to what we already all kind of knew or perceived in the beginning of this offseason, which is that the Westbrook-Lakers marriage has been disastrous. Everybody kind of understands it, and it needs to end. They just all need to figure out what the right off-ramp is. So, like, the basics haven't changed, right? And I don't care about the phone call that Chris Haynes reported that happened between the three, that fine, whatever. Like, maybe they all figure out a way, but it doesn't change who Russell Westbrook is. And that's what this really all comes back to, and what Thad Fouché's statement was really about. What I got out of that statement, and it's a long statement, it's like multiple paragraphs that he gave to ESPN, and while Thad Fouché was very diplomatic and I think very factual here, the takeaway I have is this is about Russell Westbrook's lack of self-awareness. Like, this is what it comes down to. He's saying, Thad Fouché lays out, this is his agent laying this out, with the possibility of a fourth trade in 4 years. This is his statement. The marketplace is telling the Lakers they must add additional value with Russell in any trade scenario, and even then, such a trade may require Russell to immediately move on from the new team via buyout. Thad Fouché, his longtime agent, is basically spelling out that Westbrook's value, his perceived value around the league, is in the basement. And Westbrook is the one who clearly does not seem to grasp that. And when Thad Fouché is saying his best option is to stay with the Lakers, embrace the starting role and support that Darvin Ham publicly offered, blah, 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 he's basically saying, like, do all the stuff that you don't want to do, that people have been asking Russ to do forever and that he didn't do last season, which is the usual checklist here. Play defense, play off the ball, set screens, be an effective high-level role player. Don't expect to play the role that you've played for the most of your career as the centerpiece of a team. But Westbrook hasn't wanted to adapt for the last few years, and unless he suddenly is having an epiphany and deciding he's going to change now, I just don't see how any of this ends well with him still with the Lakers. I don't know how you think, how you feel about this at this date, Chris. Like, it's July 20th, right? So we are, you know, well past the first and second waves of free agency. We are deep into the offseason now. A lot of major trades have happened in August in the course of this league. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff lingering out there. As we sit here on July 20th, my feeling is still Russell Westbrook will not be a Laker as of opening night. There's plenty of offseason left here for them to figure this out. I still think that something involving Kyrie Irving to the Lakers, Westbrook to somewhere, and the Nets getting some kind of compensation still makes the most sense. Even if that didn't work out, I still have to believe there is some other avenue here. But it's all just a mess. And by the way, one last quick thing here. If anybody thinks we're reading too much into Westbrook and LeBron and not talking to each other in a gym, everybody knows how many cameras are in the gym. Everybody knows that everybody with a cell phone, which includes all of the media, are in there snapping everything, filming everything. And players today are so hyper-conscious of everything they do, every gesture, every public move they make, who they talk to, who they don't talk to, all of it. If you wanted to make, if you want to give the impression that everything is fine, you would have at least done a perfunctory, what up, gone and tapped fists, something, anything. You wouldn't have completely avoided each other entirely as teammates. Like, there's no possibility of mistakenly reading into that. Anything you read into that of a divide between those two is accurate because they made it accurate, because they got every opportunity to decide to give us a different impression and they did not. So it is what it appears to be, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I completely understand where Thad Fouché is coming from with that statement. And Thad and Russ have had a great relationship, great working relationship over the last decade plus. So it was really startling to see that kind of statement made by his now former agent. But I understand where he's coming from. With the Lakers, Russell Westbrook is a starter. Darvin Ham has come out and said that. He's been very vocal in his support of Russell Westbrook. With the Lakers, Russell Westbrook is a max player. That's another important thing to note here as you start thinking about Russell Westbrook's future, because that's what this is all about. You know, Thad Fouché is less worried about this year for Russell Westbrook, where he's going to get $47 million anyway, than he is the next year. If Westbrook gets traded, let's say it's a three-team deal that involves Charlotte, and the Hornets, as any team that acquires Westbrook expects to do, just buys him out, waves him, says goodbye. Westbrook would then have to look around for a role with a team. Now, I think it's going to be really hard to find any team that wants to sign Westbrook going into next season. The list is very small. And any team that does sign him is not going to be plug and play. They're not going to say, you're the starting point guard of this team. Here's the ball. Go do your thing. It's not how it's going to work. Moreover, the money's not going to be there. He's going to be, in all likelihood, a minimum salary player if he gets bought out. And that Boucher knows, as every NBA agent knows, it's really hard to get out of that. If you're a veteran player and you sign a minimum salary somewhere else after a buyout, it's not like you go back to that big number. Most of the time, you wind up in that minimum small exception range for like the rest of your career. So Thad Fouché is probably looking at this Westbrook situation being like, look, we go into free agency as a max contract player in the summer of 2023. Maybe we don't get, we probably don't get, almost certainly don't get another big time deal, but we'd get higher than the minimum. We go, especially if it's a pretty good year for Russ with the Lakers, which God knows if that would happen, but we go into free agency as a minimum type guy after a turbulent year with another team. The offers aren't going to be there. So I get that from Thad Fouché's perspective. I think he's right. I think Russ has to find a way to do whatever it takes to make it work with the Lakers. He is going to have to change in every possible way. He's going to have to accept internally within himself that he's a role player at this point. That his job, whether it's as a starter or a guy coming off the bench, is to give you some instant offense, try to keep the turnovers down, and continue to develop that perimeter shot. I've talked to you about this before, Howard. Frank Vogel had many discussions with Westbrook about becoming a jump shooter as his career progressed. You know, going into this offseason, entirely focused on becoming a better perimeter shooter. That discussion, from what I was told, fell on deaf ears with Westbrook. He still believes he can be Russell Westbrook, all-star, ex-MVP type of player. Still believes that. So, if he doesn't change, it's going to be a problem. He has got to accept what he is at this point, and he's got to accept that he needs to take on a lesser role, be more of a role player, for the Lakers to be successful, and to him, by extension, get someone interested in him next summer. I mean, we talk about this a lot. If Russell Westbrook's with the Lakers, he'll play the entire season probably with the Lakers. If he's somewhere else, if he gets traded, we might never see Russell Westbrook in the NBA again. It goes back to what I said at the top of this discussion. I don't know who the team is that signs Russell Westbrook. I don't. Oklahoma City's not going to do it. The Knicks, they already got Jalen Brunson, and they're going to make a run probably at Donovan Mitchell, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. But I don't know a team out there that makes a run at Westbrook. So he's got to find a way to make it work with the Lakers, if the Lakers want to make it work at all.
It really is kind of his last chance to salvage this back end of his career, right? To kind of, you know, it's look, his legacy or his resume is already set, right? Like, he made the top 75 list. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. Has had an incredible career, and none of that ever gets erased. But, you know, we evaluate as the public your entire career. There's a reason, again, that, you know, Dwight Howard did not make the top 75 list, right? Because he had, you know, 7-8 really great seasons, and then like 7-8 just whatever, just bouncing around, you know, burning bridges, everything else. And the lasting impression of your career, if you have too many of these years at the end where you are not fitting in, where you're just kind of being a little clueless, frankly, like I say, Russ's lack of self-awareness is just really striking. It doesn't undo everything, but it does give a different impression where, wow, man, this great player, what happened to him? Well, it wasn't just that his skills eroded or his athleticism eroded. He refused to adapt. Remember, Carmelo Anthony was out of the league for a year or whatever, however long it was, because the feeling around the league was that Carmelo couldn't adapt to being just a role player. And when he finally was willing to, that's when he started to revive himself with Portland and then the Lakers. But, you know, he lost some time along the way because, at least in the view of the Rockets, who cut him loose that season after whatever, just 11 games, and then everybody else not picking him up, there was a sense that, well, Carmelo's not going to be happy unless he's still getting, you know, 20 touches a game or something. And the other guy that Westbrook keeps reminding me of is Allen Iverson, another guy who, you know, had this electric game, relied a ton on, almost entirely on, his athleticism, his explosiveness, had to be the center of the offense, was always the center of everything. Everything ran through him. And when it was no longer the case, when he couldn't carry it at the same level anymore, and when teams were asking him to fit into a different kind of role, eventually a sixth man role in Memphis, Iverson just couldn't do it. And that was it. So his career ended much sooner than it needed to because he didn't want to adapt. Again, Carmelo almost ended prematurely because he didn't want to adapt. Finally did adapt, and it's extended his career a couple of years. I don't know if Westbrook has it in him. He doesn't seem to. And everybody's built differently this way, right? Like, we have the other end of the spectrum. Like, Paul Pierce, you know, segued into a role player kind of position with the Nets and then the Wizards and then the Clippers. Wasn't always comfortable, but he did it, and he played that many more years on you know, effectively and on some decent teams. Vince Carter, of course, you know, most famously, a guy who was a, you know, multiple-time All-Star, a guy who, you know, put up incredible numbers, who was one of the most electric players in the league, and Vince, you know, plays into his 40s by deciding to play different roles for different teams, be a mentor, all this other stuff. Not everybody's built that way. So it's not to judge Westbrook, but there does seem to be an inability or refusal to adapt, to accept a different kind of role, a different set of circumstances. And like I say, a lack of self-awareness. And I, you know, you first mentioned the idea that his career could be over a few months ago, Chris, and it sounded, you know, people probably thought it sounded kind of hot takey, like, oh, wow, they're, you know, yeah, that's really extreme, and you know, but it didn't sound that extreme at the time, and it sounds less extreme all the time, because his own agent has just laid it out, now former agent, has just laid it out. If he gets traded somewhere else, it's likely to lead to a buyout, and a buyout is going to lead to him now having to look for minimum salary deals somewhere, and you scan the league, and you think, I just don't see a fit. I just don't see a team that needs Russell Westbrook, this version of him, at this stage of his career. And it's not far-fetched at all. It is not far-fetched at all to think that if things go down this path and he gets traded and bought out, that maybe we've seen the end of him. I still tend to think that somehow he'll end up somewhere, but not if he's not willing to change. And that's what every single version of Westbrook's coming season comes down to, whether it's with the Lakers or somewhere else. What is he willing to do? How much is he willing to adapt at this stage of his career? And how much is he willing to sacrifice? And if he's not, then maybe it is over.
Yeah, I think that's very possible at this point of the offseason. All right, let's talk about the Utah Jazz. To the surprise of absolutely no one, the Jazz are listening to, are engaged in conversations about Donovan Mitchell. The reporting in the aftermath of the Rudy Gobert trade was that the Jazz planned to build around Donovan Mitchell. That proved to be factual for about 37 seconds. At Summer League, Justin Zanuck, the GM of the team, said to reporters that Mitchell was not untouchable. No one was untouchable on that roster, and days later, the reports started to trickle out that Mitchell, the Knicks, or the Jazz, rather, were engaged in talks, or listening to talk to offers for Mitchell, and then later, the Jazz were engaged in talks with the New York Knicks. Now, I kind of want to keep it focused on the Knicks, because it's not at all surprising that the Knicks are interested in Donovan Mitchell. Leon Rose used to run CAA. Donovan Mitchell, a CAA client. Donovan Mitchell, strong ties to New York. His father used to work for the Mets. He's still a Mets fan. If you follow him on Twitter, he's tweeting about the Mets all the time. So there's a New York connection to Donovan Mitchell there. Here's my question with the Knicks. Like, you're talking to the Jazz about Donovan Mitchell. You know what the Jazz just got for Rudy Gobert? The equivalent of 5 first-round draft picks. 4 first, and then Walker Kessler, who was the Timberwolves first-round pick in this past draft. So basically 5 first-round picks. You know Danny Ainge. He's not going to do a deal unless he bests that offer. He's going to get at least 5 first-round picks back in return and try to gouge you for one or more of your young players. So I guess the question becomes, how aggressive should the Knicks be in going after Donovan Mitchell? Does Donovan Mitchell make the Knicks a bona fide contender in the Eastern Conference? Or, if you want to soften it a little bit, does it take them further down the path to becoming a contender in the Eastern Conference? I've got some thoughts on this, but I'll let you go first. Yeah. How aggressive do you think the Knicks should be here?
I'm a little conflicted on this one, to be honest. Look, the Knicks need a star. They don't have a star. Julius Randle was for like 32 seconds. He may never be again. There's nobody on this roster currently that projects as being the kind of guy you can build a high-level playoff team around. Donovan Mitchell would be that guy. On some level, it's a no-brainer. If a guy is available of his caliber at his age, you have the means to go get him, then you go get him. Like, I wouldn't begrudge the Knicks doing that. The strange thing is just where they are right now, right? Like, they just went all out, offloaded all these picks and you know, foregoed the number 11th pick in this past draft, did all this maneuvering, offloading contracts, all this stuff, just so they could clear the room to sign Jalen Brunson to a 4-year, $104 million contract to be their signature piece of the offseason. That's fine, except that if you knew you were going to be able to get Donovan Mitchell, and look, the Knicks maybe did not foresee this. Although part of the job, by the way, you're supposed to kind of see this stuff coming. Like, everybody knew there was or everybody around the league was pretty suspicious that a Gobert-Mitchell breakup was coming at minimum, and that Danny Ainge being Danny Ainge, you've got to also anticipate that maybe there's going to be a blow-up coming. Now, you can't count on that.
I mean, the second Danny Ainge got the job, people should have suspected that. And the moment that first round series ended, people should have expected a breakup between Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, because Danny Ainge does not do mediocre. Just doesn't do it. You're either great or you're awful in Danny's mind.
Yeah. So look, I'm not, on some level, it's, you know, the Knicks couldn't have anticipated entirely that they would have this opportunity. So you go and get Jalen Brunson, not counting on the idea you can get Donovan Mitchell. Fine. And they still may not get Donovan Mitchell, in which case they'll be glad that they went out and got Jalen Brunson, because he's a really good player and he's at a position of need. And, you know, I fully support on principle them going and signing Jalen Brunson. But a Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell backcourt is a bad idea. It's not what you would set out to do. You would not, if you started the offseason knowing that both guys were available, you would not pursue both. You just wouldn't. You would pick one or the other. You would probably pick Donovan Mitchell, obviously. He's the far more talented and accomplished player. But they are both 6'1". They both enjoy having the ball in their hands a lot. They are both defensively subpar. Brunson has his moments, but guys around the league will tell you that he's a little overrated as a defender. And Mitchell is, you know, not considered a good defender at all. So, two subpar defenders, both 6'1", and you're going to start them next to each other? And besides that, Jalen Brunson just left Dallas to, you know, leave the orbit of Luka Doncic, presumably so that he could run his own team and have more offensive responsibility, more playmaking responsibility. I don't see it as a good fit. And so on day one, I don't think this pushes the Knicks that far ahead. It doesn't move the ball that far forward for them. That said, you're not married to Jalen Brunson forever. You can trade Jalen Brunson later. And if the goal of any team that doesn't have a star is to get at least one star, so that that hopefully provides you the basis to go get the second star or the allure for the second star, well, Donovan Mitchell might be that guy. No guarantees there, but that would be step one. You know, you can't get to two stars or three stars until you have at least one star. You got to start somewhere. So again, in the abstract, I don't mind the Jalen Brunson signing. In the abstract, I don't mind chasing Donovan Mitchell with your cache of draft picks that you have assembled. But it's not a great starting place for roster building. It doesn't suggest a well-thought-out long-term plan. And it's not entirely like when they signed Amari and then traded for Carmelo back in the day when I was covering them. But there was a similar thing there where it's like, well, they got Amari and they built what looked like a pretty decent team with Amari as a centerpiece. Carmelo comes in and those two didn't play well together at all. And the whole thing just never went anywhere. This is at a different level. It's a different set of circumstances, but it's kind of the same thing where you're like, you're trying to be opportunistic, but by being opportunistic, each of these decisions on their own feel okay, but in the aggregate, they don't work out. And so just to answer your question real quick here about where does it put them, and I'll throw this back to you. I think there are seven locks for the playoffs in the East right now, and I'm including Brooklyn for the moment because at the moment, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are still there, and Ben Simmons will be healthy, and even if they're a complete shit show, they're still going to probably win a bunch of games on talent alone. But we'll asterisk the Nets because they could still be blown up before opening night. But right now, playoff locks: Milwaukee, Boston, Philadelphia, Miami, Toronto, Chicago, Brooklyn. That's seven. We've got three more spots when you talk about going down to 10 for the play-in tournament. Atlanta is obviously in the mix and have improved by getting DeJounte Murray. The Cavaliers are clearly in the mix. Charlotte, I think, maybe still in the mix. It's hard to tell. I don't know where to put Washington in all of this. And then the Knicks are in there somewhere. But you can't tell me that the Knicks with Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson, and whatever else is left after they've made the trade for Mitchell, you can't tell me that that team is better than the Bucks, Celtics, Sixers, Heat, Raptors, Bulls, or Nets as they currently stand. They're just not. So at best, they're playing, and they'd be in a battle just to get into the play-in. Again, this is not about one season, and the Knicks, I'm sure, would not be thinking about it that way. It's one step. But is this a Knicks are back baby moment if they get Donovan Mitchell? I don't think we can go there.
No, I actually don't hate the fit as much as some people do. Yes, Jalen Brunson came to New York in part because it's his opportunity to run the show. But he did thrive in Dallas playing opposite Luka Doncic. So he's shown he can do it. And Donovan Mitchell,
he's shown he can do it, but he also seemingly doesn't want to. Isn't that part of the reason he left?
True. I mean, I think a bigger part is $26 million a year or whatever it turns out to be. So,
well, Donovan, if he had given Mitchell Dallas the opportunity to counter propose, he might have gotten something.
Yeah, my read on it though was I don't think Dallas was going 5 years at $25 million per.
Maybe not, but I don't think this was purely about money. This seemed to me to be about opportunity.
Yeah, anyway, absolutely. Sorry. That was part of the Knicks pitch. You're 100% right on that. But Donovan Mitchell, number one, I think he's a better defensive player than he showed this year. I think he at least can be. He's got the physical tools. He's never going to be a stopper, but I don't think he would be the really minus defender he was this season for the Jazz. And look, he had a lot of success playing with Mike Conley, especially in those early years, first couple of years with Conley when Conley was the point guard. So I think he can play opposite those guys. And look, I think it is good to have two young mid-20s stars who are locked into long-term contracts. I think that helps you as you build towards the future. Then you can start talking about what R.J. Barrett's going to do. I thought Jericho Sims looked like a nice player. Quentin Grimes. You know, you got some young pieces on that team. Mitchell Robinson, of course. You've got some things at play there where, you know, I think the Knicks could be a 6-7 seed in the Eastern Conference. My concern, Howard, and I'll let you jump back in. My concern here, my concern is exactly what they give up. Because the Jazz, to me, are in a phenomenal position here. Because they can be patient with Donovan Mitchell. He's got 3 years left on his contract, guaranteed years anyway, and he has not publicly come out and said, I don't want to be here anymore. So they've got some time to deal with this. They've also got suitors. They've got Miami, which is out there kind of lurking, hoping to get in the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. But if they don't, the Heat, we've seen, you know, they'll do whatever it takes to get a star they believe fits into that group. You've got Phoenix now out there. Phoenix is out of the Kevin Durant sweepstakes at the moment because they can't put together a package that would make sense for Kevin Durant. But the Suns are a team that could be interested in Donovan Mitchell. They could throw Mikal Bridges and five first-round draft picks into a future deal or whatever it is to get their hands on Donovan Mitchell. And the only thing worse than dealing with Danny Ainge is dealing with Danny Ainge when he has options. When Danny can look around and go, all right, you want to give us what we want? Well, thanks, but no thanks. And that's the position I believe the Jazz and Danny Ainge are going to take here, where if you're the Knicks and you want Donovan Mitchell, well, it's five first-round draft picks and R.J. Barrett in that deal. Because if you don't give it to us, we might turn around and go get Tyler Hero and five first-round draft picks, or Mikal Bridges and five first-round draft picks. I don't think the Knicks are going to get away with saying, like, here's Obi Toppin and three first-round draft picks in exchange for Donovan Mitchell. I think the Knicks, if they do get their hands on Mitchell, are going to get gouged in the process. And that's what worries me more than Mitchell being on the team. How much you have to give up to go and get him. If they had the opportunity to sign Donovan Mitchell, I'd say do it in a heartbeat. I think worrying about the fit is overkill. Bring in Donovan Mitchell. He can play with Jalen Brunson. But if you have to give up all your draft capital for like the next decade, whatever it is, picks, swap rights, whatever it may be, plus a good young player in R.J. Barrett, that to me may be too much. That to me would be the real concern with New York, where all of a sudden you've got a nucleus with Brunson and with Mitchell, but you don't have the draft capital to keep adding on, and you're basically crossing your fingers and hoping that Brunson and Mitchell will lead free agent X to want to go there in the future.
Yeah, again, a piece of this argument is reminiscent of the Carmelo deal from way back when, and I reference it only because there was, you know, it was pretty clear at the time that the Knicks got a lot extracted out of them by the Denver Nuggets, by Masai Ujiri at the time with the Nuggets in the Carmelo deal. And I remember a lot of Knicks fans saying, oh, big deal that they had to throw in Mozgov, or big deal we had to throw in this piece or that piece. No. Every piece that you throw in, you may not think that guy is that valuable. Every piece that you give up in a deal is a piece you don't have for the next deal. So even if these are pieces of lesser value, anything that has value, second round picks, distant first round picks, young players, whatever, it's all stuff you don't have anymore to spend up for the next opportunity. And it hurt them that time because once they got Carmelo, who should have come in free agency, as I wrote 1,000 times at the time, instead of Carmelo coming in free agency, they made the trade for him. They gave up everything they had. They had nothing left, so that when Chris Paul was forcing his way out of New Orleans and wanted to play with Carmelo and the Knicks, that was very well documented at the time, the Knicks had nothing left to make that deal. They weren't even in the running. And so you do have to be mindful, like, oh, you've got all these picks. Ah, who cares? Give them as many as they want. You've got to, you know, this was the whole point of the exercise of getting all these picks, was to make a big splash for in a trade for a guy like Donovan Mitchell. But Donovan Mitchell's going to need help. And as we've established in this discussion, like, this is not a complete team by any stretch. They're going to need another guy. They're going to need multiple guys. Also, by the way, a lot of the young players you mentioned, Chris, some of the Knicks' most intriguing young guys, whether it's Toppin or Grimes, McBride, Quickly, some of those guys are going to Utah on this deal. It's not just going to be a bunch of picks. You still got to, you know, deal with salary matching rules or whatever. I don't know where the Jazz's cap situation is, but you're going to have to deal with at least some part of the salary matching rules. And besides that, the Jazz, as they did in the Rudy Gobert deal, aren't going to take just picks. They're going to want some young players as well. So some of the Knicks' young depth is going out the door in this deal. So you don't want to overpay. But you also do have to recognize that Danny Ainge holds all the cards here. He does not have to trade Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell's under contract for at least 3 more years. Donovan Mitchell has not, to our knowledge, asked out. Even if he did, you don't have to honor it. The All-Star game is in Salt Lake City next February. There's already been, you know, rumblings that they wouldn't mind still having him there just to represent them when they host the game. I think that's silly, by the way. I don't think it should matter.
Which, by the way, I don't believe Danny Ainge is going to be beholden to. Like, he's just not.
No.
Like, if
no,
there's a right deal for Donovan Mitchell, he goes.
Of course. Like I say, I think that's silly. But, you know, ownership may have a different feeling about that than I do. And the, you know, the bottom line for the Jazz is, and for Danny Ainge is, if there's a great deal out there and it's the deal you want to make, you make it. If not, you have every ability to just go into next season with Donovan Mitchell, what's left of this, you know, prior incarnation of the team, all the players that you brought in from Minnesota. You can flip some of those guys in the meantime, perhaps for other pieces that fit around Donovan Mitchell. They still have, if they wanted to, they could still just decide to rebuild on the fly around Donovan Mitchell. I'm not sure if that's the best long-term plan, because they already had, you know, hit a hard ceiling with the Mitchell Gobert version of this team. I don't know how long it takes you to even get back to that level, much less to try to go beyond it. And in the meantime, at some point, Donovan Mitchell will get impatient and will ask out and say, we've gone as far as we can go here. Get me somewhere else. So, you know, that's looming out there, but that trigger is not present yet. Like, the clock is not ticking that loudly yet on the Mitchell era there. So Danny Ainge can afford to slow play this all he wants. The Knicks, I would say, have more urgency to go and get a Donovan Mitchell, since they don't have a star, than the Jazz have to trade him. But it's an interesting thing, right? Like, over the last 20 years, we've seen where, because Knicks ownership has been very impatient and has been all about star chasing, it feels like they are always desperate to make a big move. They haven't shown that kind of desperation in the 2.5 years under Leon Rose, to their credit. They've been, I think, fairly methodical, fairly patient. So I don't think they'll overdo it in this case, but you never know when Dolan is just going to say, I don't care, go do it. Dolan's the one who hijacked the Carmelo trade in the first place, which is why they ended up giving up so much back then. Again, it's an important reference point, because it tells you a lot about how the Knicks have operated in the past. Doesn't mean it's how they'll do it this time. Maybe Dolan has learned some lessons along the way. Maybe Leon Rose has more autonomy than any of his predecessors over the last 20 years. But I don't sense that the Knicks are in some position where they feel desperate to do this. But if we're measuring leverage, Danny Ainge and the Jazz have all the leverage, because they don't have to make a trade at all.
No, and you know, the two other teams I named, Phoenix, Miami, those are the potential obvious suitors right now. You never know who could emerge in 3 months, 4 months, when we get close to the trade deadline. Another team could be out there being like, wow, we think Donovan Mitchell is the missing piece. We'll give you a whole bunch of trade assets. Frankly, another team like Minnesota, which, you know, for its reasons, thought Rudy Gobert was worth 4 first-round draft picks and a couple of young players. So there's reason for the Jazz to be patient on this, and that's exactly what I think they're going to do. So what happens, Howard.
I will just say, too, I wonder if there's still a scenario out there, right? We had this really intriguing fake trade proposed by Bobby Marks last week that I loved, but it involved this, you know, an 8 and sign and trade and all that stuff. That deal looked really intriguing to me, and it involved the Nets, Suns, Pacers, Jazz. And that one ended up with Donovan Mitchell and I think Ayton and Bridges were all in Brooklyn in that one. You know, maybe these teams are all solving each other's problems still. And the Suns, it's more difficult now with Ayton off the board, having them having matched his offer sheet, and now he's untradeable for a bit. But I do wonder if between the Nets still needing to deal Kyrie, the Nets still thinking about possibly dealing Durant, the Jazz, you know, contemplating Donovan Mitchell's future, the Heat needing some more star power, there's still a lot of teams in play, elements in play, where all these things could still end up, or at least some pieces of these, some of these elements could end up being linked in a mega deal that happens while I'm somewhere in Europe in August. And good luck covering that, Chris, because I'm not getting on the phone.
Yeah, I think it's obviously any kind of mega deal is less likely with Ayton off the board, because not only can he not be traded, I think, till January 15th, and he has veto power over a deal in his first year. He also can't be traded to Indiana in that first year. So Pacers, who obviously had the real interest in Ayton, you know, that they're off the board as far as that goes. But I guess anything can happen. I do think, you know, unfortunately for us, I do think there's going to be some activity in August. I think when we get closer to the start of training camp, whether it's a team like Brooklyn, Utah, New York, Miami, they may just decide, look, whether we can't get Durant, we're going to go this direction, we're going to trade Durant. Like, there's just going to be some decisions made sometime in August that lead to some activity. I'm pretty fairly convinced of that. So, well, I'll make sure we don't call you hard. I'll handle it. I'll handle the phone calls on that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Actually, I think you and I might be gone at the same time, in which case we're just going to be pissing off all of our editors. It's interesting because, like, you know, the Dwight Howard deal was an August deal. I'm trying to remember
Kyrie
what else.
Irving, August deal.
Kyrie Irving. So it does happen sometimes, but I don't think we've ever had, like, multiple stars dealt in, like, August, September, and it could happen because of all the guys we just named. Like, an incredible amount of talent whose future, throw Westbrook in there too, for that matter, whose futures are all still kind of up in the air.
I agree. Your future, Howard, not up in the air, despite that last cough at the end of the show. Glad you're feeling better, man. I know you're taking a couple weeks off, so enjoy it.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.